Welcome back to the Expert Witness Playbook, the podcast where we explore the people, strategies, and stories behind expert witness work. Whether you're an attorney, physician, engineer, nurse, or an expert in any field, our goal is simple: to help you become a better expert witness. Before we get started, if you're enjoying the podcast, I'd really appreciate your support. Please take a moment to like this episode, subscribe to the channel, and leave us a review. Those simple actions help us reach more experts and attorneys and allow us to continue bringing you conversations with outstanding guests from across the legal world. Today, I'm excited to welcome Jacqueline Recker. Jacqueline is a nationally certified labor and delivery nurse with more than 14 years of experience in high-risk obstetrics. She remains clinically active at the bedside, where she serves as a charge nurse, preceptor, and triage nurse, while also teaching evidence-based fetal monitoring as an AWON instructor. She's earned national certification in inpatient obstetrics, antepartum nursing, and electronic fetal monitoring, and has built a reputation for helping attorneys understand the nursing standard of care in complex birth injury and obstetrical cases. In addition to her clinical work, Jacqueline found Clauda Counseling, LLC, where she provides expert witness services and case review. She's also developed the TrueHue, a proprietary fetal monitoring reporting system designed to make complex electronic fetal monitoring records more understandable and easier to analyze. Her passion is not just identifying what happens in a case, but understanding the systems, communication, and safety issues that influence patient outcomes. I've had the opportunity to get to know Jacqueline through the medical legal community, and she's a fellow Michigander. And what stands out is that she combines deep bedside experience with an educator's mindset. She clearly enjoys teaching, improving systems, and helping attorneys and experts better understand the nursing perspective in obstetrical litigation. Today, we're going to talk about her professional journey, how she found her way into expert work, and hear more about what she's been up to. Jacqueline, welcome to the Expert Witness Playbook. I'm really looking forward to this conversation. And also, congratulations. Congratulations. We're recording this on Legal Nurse Consultant Week. So it's a big week. I'm seeing a lot of people talk about that on LinkedIn. So, well, welcome.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. Super excited to be here.
And you are obviously in your happy place up north in northern Michigan. We had some time to chat about that. We're both up north. For those out there that don't know what up north means, it's a state of mind more than just a place. But
it
really depends on where you are. Let's hit the ground running. Tell me, everybody enjoys hearing kind of the story that sort of kind of brought you into the expert world. But as we know, in order to be an expert, you have to be active. You have to be working. You have to hone your craft. So just walk us all through kind of your journey into and through nursing.
Sure. So I went to nursing school at Grand Valley State University, which is in just outside of Grand Rapids, Michigan. Finished that at the end of 2009. So got my license right in the beginning of 2010. Jumped right into neurotrauma, which was great for me. I learned a lot, learned that critical thinking, learned how to take care of sick, how to recognize sick, time management. But it wasn't really my passion. I always knew that I wanted to be kind of in the labor and delivery realm or NICU or something in women's health. And so I found a job and back in Grand Rapids and moved there. And I've been there since 2011. As for the expert work, I grew up a little bit differently than most. I had a father that was a personal injury attorney. So I always grew up hearing about different cases. He didn't do a ton of med mal, but a little bit. And whenever he did, I really kind of liked learning about that, hearing about all the different people that were involved in those cases. And I really thought, someday that sounds like something that I would want to do, thinking it was far off in my future. And, life just kind of threw a curveball. My mother passed away from an unfortunate event, and it kind of really got me thinking about doing this work sooner than I had planned. And it just kind of fell into my lap. I explored it, and all of a sudden, I got my first case, and here we are.
Awesome. And about how long have you been pursuing or doing expert work?
Sure, I really started looking into it towards the end of 2023. Kind of did some digging around right around Christmas time, and I think my first case was late spring of 24. So just over 2 years now.
Yeah, and what I enjoy a lot is the legal nurse community is you guys are so supportive to each other. It's amazing. You guys, it's quite different than physician experts where it just doesn't seem like it's the same. Like you guys are always like cheering each other on and even though
I
you
don't
might be
understand why
competing,
you wouldn't. Yeah, why wouldn't
I don't
you?
know. I don't, it seems different, but I think it's amazing. I had a chance to go this past year to a legal nurse, American Association of Legal Nurse Consultants combined with the American Association of Nurse Life Care Planners. And it was awesome. And I got to meet a lot of really, really amazing nurses and yeah, just the energy there. I don't know why physicians have never sort of created an association to get together. It just hasn't happened. So anyway, I just give a big shout out to the legal nursing community because of how supportive you guys are to each other.
Yeah, really, it's great. It's how I kind of was able to get started so quickly is people are so kind and generous and willing to help.
One of the things I hear often is it's and everybody, it's hard to get started. You know what I mean? It's hard to get the first case and it's slow go and people want to be getting more. Like what do you felt like has been successful for you in getting your name out there, getting attorneys or law firms to know who you are?
I wish I had a good answer for you. I really don't. I don't know what has worked best. I don't know if I'm. Some of my friends have called me a unicorn. I just put my name out there on LinkedIn. I am on a couple directories, which I know there's mixed feelings about that. To me, it's just a passive way to have my name out there.
Same way. I'm on
But
Seek, I own it. I own it. If people don't know that you're available, and
Exactly.
they're not going to call you. And so it gets brought up at almost
Yeah.
every deposition, and
And
it's going
I have
to.
an answer for it. I'm a busy mom. I'm a coach. I am, involved in my kids. I'm involved at the bedside, and I want to do this work, but I don't have time to quote advertise. I just don't. So being on LinkedIn and being on a few of those listservs have really, kind of jump started my business. So I don't have any regrets about that.
No, it's you own it and that's what I say. So LinkedIn, I hadn't done LinkedIn for many years and got involved more in the last year or two. And it's tell me a little bit about your experience with LinkedIn. I've enjoyed it. I've made a lot of connections with people. Like just if somebody hasn't been involved in LinkedIn, we did a podcast with Ali,
Oh, Shake,
and
yeah.
he's the LinkedIn guru,
He
and
sure
that
is.
was a, yeah he knows what he's doing. But what have you found just with LinkedIn? Like what have you found that's worked and hasn't worked?
So I like to say I have a love-hate relationship with LinkedIn. I think that it is so great to form connections, and that's really how I have met almost all of my new, I would say, good friends. and connected with attorneys. But I think that there's a lot of pressure in the LinkedIn community. There's a lot of pressure to post and to make sure that your content is just perfect so that, nothing you say or do can be used against you in the future. And it's just it's a great platform to get your name out there. I just think it needs to be used with caution and good judgment.
Absolutely, absolutely. As I've talked about almost every episode is you have to be careful what you put out there. Anything
You
you put
do.
out there will, if it can be, it will be brought up during deposition and trial.
Absolutely.
Whether it's your website, whether it's social media postings, whether it's in directories, whether it's in emails that you may send, whatever it is, people will find out,
Yeah, there is
and
zero
just
privacy.
yeah, no, and you shouldn't expect, I don't think people should expect privacy when they're
No.
when they're in this when they're doing this work. I mean, I think there's personal things that I've been asked at deposition which I thought were inappropriate, but so I think there is a level of privacy from that, but if you're putting things out there, they're going to get
Expect to be
examined.
asked. Yeah,
Yeah,
absolutely.
yeah.
I think people
Well,
forget too, like even your comments on people's posts, those get looked at too.
oh, absolutely. Just think about that everything's under a microscope. I think that's important. So you've got a few cases under your belt and even a few depositions. And as somebody who's done a lot of depositions, they're every single one of them to me is it feels very high stakes. I always say if I don't feel nervous going into it, there's something wrong because they're just that important. And so tell us a little bit about sort of your experience, like, for somebody out there that may not have done a deposition yet. How would you coach them in preparing for a deposition?
Great question. I would say be over prepared. You can't prepare too much. You should know the records better than anyone else. That way, if you get asked a question, you're not fumbling or saying, oh, I got to look that up. It's okay, obviously, to refer to the record to make sure, if they ask you something very specific, but nothing should be a surprise.
Yeah, you really need to know the story and understand, meaning the record, what happened, and having some of the key facts in front of you, I think is important. But yeah, really understanding and knowing. I think one of the things people worry about is time that they prepare and that the attorneys want you to prepare, number
They
one,
do.
and they will compensate you to prepare. You know what I mean? At before every deposition, I have a line item is deposition preparation. No matter how many hours I take, they get charged for that. And that's super important. Prior to depositions, I assume you meet with the attorney who has retained you, correct?
Yes, yep, I've met both in person and over Zoom before.
Right. And I think that's another thing that if you're getting ready for a deposition, you really need to meet with the attorney. If they don't want to meet with you, that would be very unusual and very worrisome. Or if
Yeah.
they're rushed, that would be very worrisome because they sort of they know kind of the big picture of the case better than anybody else. And so getting their understanding of the case is really important going into the deposition because there may be nuances of what's going on with the case that may not be medical, but that are good for you to know and making sure you know who's been deposed and what's going on. So yeah.
Absolutely. That's one of the questions that I ask, before I even accept the case is, should this go to deposition? You're going to prep me, right? If
Absolutely.
they
Yes.
say no, I don't really want to work with them.
Yeah, no. That's that's the preparation is really everything because, as I've said, a deposition is often feels like a open notes final exam in front of a professor, oral
Yes.
exam, and the professor wants you to fail. It's sort of like
That is so accurate. That's
it
exactly my
feels,
experience.
it is, it's the final exam, and I enjoy trials way more than depositions. Out of all, people say, what's the hardest part of being an expert? Depositions, by far,
Okay.
are the hardest part. Because trials, you get to start with the direct examination, which is the attorney who retained you asking you all the questions, and then you buckle in for the cross-examination. But there's a judge sitting there, so there are some guardrails. And there's no judge sitting there during depositions. And often it's not videotaped, so you don't, in the transcript, you don't see tone and different things like that. You just see the words. So, as far as depositions go, since you've had some experience, have you had any surprises? What has been sort of your, what has surprised you the most about depositions?
One of my depositions was rather lengthy, which is fine, but I didn't expect to be asked so many questions about things that didn't pertain necessarily to my opinions on the case. It was exactly like you said, an open book test where they wanted me to fail. It's like all of the things that he was asking me about were just areas of the case that, I didn't necessarily have a problem with. So I think what I was surprised about is I thought we were going to be talking about one certain area, but that's not necessarily the case. You need to be prepared to talk about everything.
And be prepared. I think that's important. Be prepared to say, well, that wasn't a question that I was asked to, that
Look at.
I was asked to look at. The questions that, I've had cases where there are pediatric neurology issues that I wasn't asked. So I could, but I wasn't asked to look at that. And I was asked to look at a very specific question. And so that knowing what your charge is and being able to say one of two things is super important, I think, is I wasn't asked to address that.
And it wasn't like he was asking me things that weren't part of the case and part of nursing care. It was. It's just not what I thought the focus was going to be on. So, another thing that surprised me was for my very first one, I mean, that attorney had done his homework. I know they look into you, but he knew lots and lots of details about me. I was like, this guy's good. So you
Yeah,
just
they
got to be
do.
ready that they've really dug.
Yeah, they will. And they have a lot of different avenues now where they can find out. They're going to analyze LinkedIn, they're going to analyze online presence. Once you've done a fair number of depositions, there's these they keep either side keeps databases of depositions. There's a company out there called Expert Witness Profiler that they will, you can look somebody up and pay, an attorney can. I've just looked at that, but I mean, I have never, I don't have to go in there and analyze other experts, but there are lots of ways to find out information about people and experts, and it is surprising. And they have, a lot of these attorneys have associates and other attorneys that are working the case and doing a lot of background work and preparing. Often wonder if during the deposition, if somebody may be listening and passing along questions in the middle of it. I never know. I've never asked, but I've always been suspicious of that, like
Yeah,
in the
I
middle of
think
it,
that's a
like,
reasonable suspicion to have.
yeah. The other thing that you were kind of is if something's not in your expertise, I think it's important to just say, oh, that's outside of my expertise. If
Oh, yeah.
that almost every deposition, I say, "Oh no, that's outside of my expertise," or "No, I'm not giving standard of care opinions because you know that's not within my expertise." Those sorts of things. Being ready to say when you haven't been asked to address it, even if it could be an opinion that you have, if you haven't been asked to address it, you should just say that. And number two is, and don't get bullied into answering a question that you can't answer. Sometimes you will get asked a question over and over and you have to just continue to repeat and know that you're getting paid by the hour to sit there. And it's their deposition to take. And so you have to be ready to just buckle in and sit there for the long haul.
Agreed. So, yeah. I think that one of, you know, you mentioned that you get asked about standard of care. One of the things I get asked as a nurse is causation. I don't speak to that and I won't speak to that. So you just have to listen really, really carefully to what they actually are asking.
Yeah, you really do. I think that goes without saying. I think the first, you know, a lot of times people say the first thing you're supposed to do is take a breath after every question. Take a breath, digest the question, and answer it.
Yes.
And answer it with as few words as possible. You know, it's right. You know, I'm a chatty guy, so that's one of my biggest struggles. Even, you know, I've gone past the 300.
Oh wow.
300 depositions. Yeah. Yeah. I think that recently I passed that and I look back, I read a lot of them because, you know, I tend to read and sign and do the errata sheet and make sure everything. And I was really chatty during that answer. I didn't have to, you know, it was a good answer, it was a good answer, but it was kind of chatty. So, that's my own critique of myself. I always tell people there are about five or six answers. Yes, no, I wasn't asked that to address that. It's outside of my expertise. I don't know. I don't know is a perfectly fine answer. If you don't know, you don't know.
Right.
And then the last one is sort of funny. I say the last answer is green. People say green. And I say, yeah. I mean, if somebody asks you, what color is grass? You say green. But so many experts will say, well, you know, in Michigan in July, we don't get a lot of rain and it gets a little brown and, you know, but then in the spring it's green and then the fall, you know, no, green, you know what I mean? Yeah. Just, yeah, keep it simple. Mm-hmm. Exactly. I want to know, as somebody who does a lot of alleged obstetrical negligence cases, I would call it, you know, the fetal monitoring comes mm-hmm. up in all of those cases. And that's one of the areas that I say outside of my expertise. I have zero ability to look at fetal monitoring. It's just, they're just a bunch of squiggly lines. Some are flat and bumpy. Some mm-hmm. are going up like a roller coaster. Yeah. It's like some above, some below. You've created something and you showed it to me and I was like, wow, this is so cool. Even a guy like me can understand when you kind of put it together. Tell me about this and our audience about this TrueHue, TrueHue, which you've trademarked and yep. I think is amazing. Tell me how that came about and what it does to help attorneys.
Sure. So it's actually TrueHue.
Oh, thank you.
That's okay. Yeah.
All right. All right.
So it's obviously a play on truth and color. And really when I started looking at these cases and working with attorneys, one of the core issues in these cases, like you said, is fetal monitoring. And, you know, they want to learn all about it and they want to understand the nuances of it. And without all the bedside years of experience and all of the clinical teaching, it's pretty nuanced in areas, you know, it can be difficult. So I thought to myself, how can I make something visual for attorneys to be able to quickly understand what I'm saying. And also, how could I make something for the layperson that doesn't look at this ever, you know, meaning a jury? And so I kind of just built it as I went along with my experience in reviewing cases, and it all just kind of came together. But I've had nothing but great feedback from it, and you know, it's even helped settle cases before their cases. You know, I'll do it and they'll bring it into the hospital and say, look, this is what we have, and it doesn't even become a case. So it's a pretty powerful tool, in my opinion.
So, because we don't have it, you know, most people are listening to this and they're not viewing it. You will mark, like, for people that don't know what a fetal monitoring strip is, tell people what is on there, and what is it looking at? Maybe you can explain what fetal monitoring, because there are a lot of people that have no clue what that is.
Yeah. So when a mother is in labor, we're typically, when they're in the hospital, we're watching the fetal monitoring strip. We have them hooked up to a machine that's reading an ultrasound of baby's heart rate. It's also giving us a reading of what's happening with uterine activity. And then it creates a printout on a strip in live form for caregivers to watch and observe and intervene if necessary. And so there's, you know, all different categories of strips. We use three different ones, 1, 2, and 3. Category
okay.
1 means everything is going great. Everything can proceed as is, and really no intervention is necessary. That's a healthy mom, healthy baby. Category 2, well, actually, it's easier if I say category 3 first. Category 3 is we need to be at the bedside assessing, intervening, and potentially going for expedited delivery rather quickly. So it's more of a dire situation where we're worried that the oxygen to baby is not going well, and that, you know, we need to intervene. Whereas category 2 is everything in between, what's not category 1 and what's not category 3, which is really what the majority of laboring moms are experiencing.
So it's a big...
It's a wide
category
range.
2 is a big, it,
yep.
it, it's sort of the biggest bucket between perfect and oh my, like we need to,
yes.
Yeah,
it,
yeah, it's,
it, is,
it sounds like it's a very big, broad range of
yeah.
Within that. Okay.
It is. Yep. And so understanding that wide bucket is where a lot of these cases come from, is there's mismanagement or misunderstanding or misinterpretation happening in that category 2 area. And so what I've done with my TruHeal is kind of made that more clear. I go through and I add color to it to highlight the areas of concern.
Okay.
There's different areas of, you know, different types of decelerations, and differentiating those in color for attorneys and a jury is very helpful.
Because the baby's heart rate is telling us a little bit about what's going on with the baby. Obviously, it's only one piece of information, but it's the one piece that we're looking at.
Yeah,
and
it's the best that we have to monitor in real time.
Right. And I hear about things like variability, you know, mm-hmm. like you hear a lot about variability. What is variability? I hear about that, and I don't really understand that very well.
Yeah, variability is the beat-to-beat fluctuation in the heart rate over time. So babies have a normal heart rate of between 110 and 160, and then
okay.
where it likes to settle at, say it's 130, the variability is going to be what we're assessing off of that 130 baseline. So how many beats does it fluctuate up and down? And from there, we decide, is it absent, minimal, moderate, or marked? We want to see that it's moderate. That's our best indicator that baby is well oxygenated.
Okay. So when the variability goes down and it becomes much more flat, you become concerned.
Yeah. And, you know, sometimes it's completely normal for that variability to kind of diminish. Some medications can do that. And sometimes
okay.
Just a normal sleep cycle. But it's about assessing the trend over time and then kind of differentiating is this normal? Are we maybe potentially going into the road of abnormal and we need to intervene?
Right. And just like everything, there's always sort of it needs to be interpreted in the bigger picture. And there's a lot of nuance to
There
this.
is.
And
There
so,
is.
yeah. And that's kind of the case with a lot of this expert work. It's not just one piece of information. A lot of times the attorneys get fixated on one piece of information and want to, because, want to make the case or try to quote get you on this one piece of information. But it really is, it's sort of the bigger picture of the
Yes,
clinical
that's
context and things like that. Yeah.
exactly. That's one of my, go-to responses. Well, it depends on the whole clinical context and the trend over time. It's pretty rare that one decel or one piece of information is going to decide what should be done. There's some emergent situations such as, a prolapse cord. Okay, we know the outcome of that. We're going to go to the operating room. But besides that, and a few other things, but overall, you have to take all pieces of the puzzle and put it together. You can't just go off one thing.
Exactly. Well, this has been great. One of the things, if people are listening, I want them to be able to get in touch with you. How would somebody that wants to reach out to you, how would they get in touch with you, Jacqueline?
Sure, the best way is to find me on LinkedIn. Send me a message there or just email me. My email is Clada Counsel, so it's CladaCounsel, LNC, like legal nurse consultant, at gmail.com.
Perfect. Yeah, and we'll have that up on the screen, and to have that available for people that may be watching also. So, well, I want to say thank you for joining me today on the Expert Witness Playbook. As always, it's the most fun for me to get to talk to other people and hear their experience, and I think it's really important to the audience to kind of hear people's journey and how they got in and what's worked and what hasn't. So for those of you out there, if you're enjoying this podcast, if you could please like, subscribe, share, tell a friend, tell a colleague about us. We continue to grow. And the other thing is if you think your story or you know of somebody that would like to be on the podcast, we're always looking for new guests. We're even looking for non-medical, trying to branch out into other areas and hear expert stories. And so reach out to you can find us on expertwitnessplaybook.com. But until next time, thanks for listening.